When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Chronicle, the history of Newcastle United. I'm Matt Ketchell, football editor at Chronicle Live, and we are back with part two of episode 18, which is titled European Glory. Bob Moncur is back with us to discuss the FA's Cup homecoming. Last week, in part one, Bob discussed Newcastle's first ever foray into Europe, the route to the final via games with the likes of Feyenoord and Glasgow Rangers, and winning and scoring in both legs of the final itself in Hungary. Today, he talks us through the trophy parade and his relationship with big Newcastle players of the 60s and 70s era, Brian Pop Robson and Malcolm MacDonald. As ever, I'm joined by Paul Joannou, the club's official historian. So settle in and enjoy the stories from a real Newcastle United legend, Bob Moncur. Bob, you obviously, unfortunately, the last Newcastle United captain to lift the trophy, but you mentioned the FA's Cup homecoming. We've got an image here actually that I'm going to flash up on the screen for people watching on our YouTube channel or on the video that I upload to Chronicle Live's website. This is the homecoming. I assume you're there with Willie McFaul. You've got the FA's Cup in your hand, in your right hand, lifting it up proudly. I assume it looks like you've just alighted the bus and are you bringing it back into St James's Park?
Well, I can just, if we've got time, I can tell you a little story about when we flew back in to Newcastle. And don't forget, in my mind, it wasn't a massive occasion. You know, all through the competition, we just kept winning game after game after game. Maybe he's not realised how big it was going to be back for the Newcastle fans. But when we got back, we flew back and we got into Newcastle Airport in the afternoon, I think it was. And I remember somebody came up and said to me, the boss says you've got to take the cup out first, out the plane. And I'm going, what do you mean out the plane for? He says, you've got to be the first out the plane door with the cup. And I thought it was a Mickey take. I said, okay, if you ever must. And I remember stepping out and, you know, in the old-fashioned plane, the door goes up like that and the steps go down. And I remember standing there and it still makes me emotional yet. It was like if you stepped off in a foreign country, you know, the heat hits you. This noise came from the old Newcastle Airport building. People lined up there all over the place in the roar. And I remember thinking, this is important. And we obviously got on the bus, lined a lot of the way down. And there's another classic story. You might have to cut some of this out, man. There was a classic story. We didn't have, for you younger people, there was no dual carriageway to the airport in them days. You had to go through Wolsingham, through Kenton Bankford, and there's a low bridge there, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, because there's a low bridge there, we couldn't get a double-decker. So somebody improvised and got a single-decker bus because it would get under the bridge as against a double-decker. And what they did was they put a seat in the middle of this single-decker bus. They put a table so as we could stand on the table and put our hands with a cup. So now can you imagine? We're going along and it was Armstrong's bus, green and white Armstrong's bus, who used to take us everywhere. We're going through Wolsingham Village with a bridge, going through Kenton Bankford Bridge. And I've got the cup up like this because there's a lot of people out at that time. And all of a sudden there's a big bang. And I've actually hit electric wires and it sparks everywhere. And the fact that I was stood on a wooden table probably saved my life. Oh my God. A mark on the cup where the wires had been, because, you know, obviously single decker buses, I was just too high up, bang, and there was a mark on that cup. To even when we handed it back, they couldn't get the mark off. But I thought that was some homecoming, that, you know, back with a bang, dead. Then we went to St James's Park, down Barrack Road, and again, we're not really sure what reception we're going to get, but the whole city stopped, people were taking time off work, and I remember coming just down Barrack Road towards the ground, and there used to be the stand in the Leeds end, there used to be a gap, and we could see the place was packed. There must have been 40,000 people in the ground Plus the fact that ones you see in the car park, all the rest of it, just an amazing, amazing homecoming. You can see all the people in the background there. And there's a bus. That's the bus at the back.
Yeah.
And there's some photographs of us actually showing a cup out the roof of the bus. But that was a story which I'll never forget. And, fantastic. And then on the pitch, as I say, loads of people took time off and went around the pitch, and it was just a great occasion. One of the best occasions in my life.
Absolutely, yeah, I can imagine. And you spoke about some of your teammates there. Paul, I was wondering if you could give us a quick roll call of the team who won the first cup for Newcastle in 1969.
Yeah, well, as Bob said, it was a hard-working side with a great spirit. Willie McFaul between the posts, and he had developed into one of the country's best goalkeepers. David Craig, Frank Clark were top fullbacks. Centre of defence saw Bob with either Ollie Burton or John McNamee. Two pretty solid and fearsome centre-backs. Midfield had two workers in Tommy Gibbon, Danish lad Benny Arentoft, and on the flank saw Jim Scott and Jackie Sinclair, with a young Alan Foggan there breaking into the side. And up front, of course, Big Win Davies, who the Continentals could never handle, partnered Pop Robson. And we've covered Big Win in a previous episode. You know, Pop Robson was had 2-3 great seasons at that time for Newcastle United.
Mm. Bob, any special particular memories of this legendary group?
Oh, yes. I think the biggest thing about them was it was a team spirit. There was probably two groups in the team off the field. There was golfers and some of the lads like to go racing. But on the, so that was a sort of natural group. There was golfers and people who want to go racing and one thing. But on the pitch, 100% everybody behind each other. No prima donnas. You know, everybody just did their job, did it as well as they could. And we had no, and even when things were tough, we still dug in. And I think that was the proof of the pudding in the final. We managed to come back from absolutely getting hammered and still perform decently. But it was just a joy to play with, you know, really. And you know, I was skipper. I'm getting a lot of credit for the first cup thing, but really it wasn't about me. It wasn't about the team. It was team spirit. I was lucky enough to score the goals, but that's maybe reflected away from the great team spirit we had. And I look back and think, when I'm often asked, which is the best team you've ever played in at Newcastle? I would say, well, the most talented team I played with in Newcastle or captain was the final, the cup final team. Talented, I say, but the best team, I mean that, the best team would definitely be the first cup because of the team spirit, which is probably, maybe it's not as good in the FA Cup final 74. Talent, more talented players, but it's not always about talented players, it's about team spirit.
Mm. And we often do player focuses on what we call cornerstone players of Newcastle United's history. And Paul mentioned we covered Win Davies last episode, and Brian Pop Robson definitely qualifies, Paul. So can you tell us a bit about Pop, please?
Yeah, well, in that season of 68-69, he scored 30 goals all told, including 7 in the first cup run. And he had a wonderful time at that point in his career. Although born in Sunderland, Brian was raised in the Tyne Valley at Prudhoe, and he joined Newcastle as a kid in November 1962. He wasn't a big striker. He was 5'8", 5'9", but he was stocky and could hit a cracking shot, netting several spectacular goals at St James's Park. And maybe he should have been capped for England. He was tipped on a number of occasions, but he never got that call up. And by the time he left Newcastle after falling out with Joe Harvey, he scored 97 goals in 244 games. So that was a pretty good record. He was nicknamed, of course, Pop, from the Kellogg's Rice Krispie advert, which still is on the go today. You know, he was the Pop after Snap, Crackle and Pop, who were three friends when he was growing up in Prudhoe. And he moved to West Ham for a big fee, and he scored over 100 goals for the Hammers, and now is back in the Tyne Valley in retirement. Great lad.
Bob, anything to say, particularly maybe about the Win Davies Pop Robson combination?
Well, I think in my mind, Pop Robson was an absolutely fantastic goal scorer. One thing about him, unlike some players, you know, we've heard over in the past about when Pop had a chance, he would almost certainly hit the target. He would very rarely blaze him over the bar. He used to always hit the target. And he had two good feet as well, left foot, right foot. Didn't matter how it came to him, he could always get a shot on target. And the biggest compliment I can play to Callum Wilson, he's a similar type of player. You know, they always hit the target, don't they? Always seem to know inside the box. They've got the conscience of where everybody is, and they hit the target. And I think that's very, very important. Pop was a master at that. And many is a time when things have been going too well, and Pop, I couldn't shout at Paul, Pop. If I gave Pop a rollicking, he didn't like that. So I had to go and say, Robbo, we need you now. Come on, give it, you know, do. And I put my arm out, and he would go. He needed that natural sort of confidence. But when he was down, just a little one in his ear, and off he was again. And he was not a cocky player at all, just a good player, knew his business, worked very hard to become what he did. And there's famous stories about him when he was a youngster, or when he was playing, he wasn't the sharpest, but his father-in-law, whose name, help me out here, Paul.
Len Heppel.
Len Heppel, who was a dancer, you know, proper international dancer, he used to get him and say, Pop, you need to be sharper. And because of his dance training, he got Pop being quicker and more confident, because Pop was quite shy. And there's a famous story about Lenny lived in Hexham. And in the summertime, Lenny got a hold of him and says, right, I'm going to make you more confident. I'm going to make you sharper. And he got him in, and he said he went in one of the parks in Hexham. And Lenny says, right, I'm going to go forward, and I'm going to hide behind a tree. And you're going to have to shout, Lenny, where are you? True story. And Lenny would go, and that was to get Paul at Pop's confidence, not to be embarrassed. And he was going, he says, I'm going down this, Lenny, where are you? And people are looking at me, it was nuts. But that was just one of the greatest stories about Pop, and great player, should have been capped for England. That was the disgrace that was. He should have been capped. And I think one of the finest goal scorers, and we've had many at Newcastle, but he was one of them.
Mm. And for the next two seasons after the 68-69 campaign, United were involved in Fairs Cup action. And Paul, what were some of the standout games from those European campaigns?
Well, there was a couple of special ties, really. In 1969-70, we played Anderlecht in the quarter-final. They were a top outfit with some wonderful players like Paul van Himst and Ove Kinval. United were 2-0 down from the first leg, but in front of 60,000, the road back to 2-2 with Bob scoring, then took the lead
again. 2-2.
Then in the dying minutes, and I'll never forget this guy's name, Thomas Nordahl. He was related to a famous player of the 40s from Sweden, and he picked up a loose ball in the dying seconds and struck a great shot into the net, and United were out on away goals, and that was a remarkable night. But that was surpassed the following season, really. In 1970-71, we played Internationale, or Inter Milan to us, but in England. It was a game, to me personally, that was the pick of them all. Inter was so huge, with many famous names from the World Cup in 1970, people like Mazzola and Facchetti, and United recorded a great draw in the San Siro in the first leg, and then 60,000 watched them. Just a truly amazing night of football at St James's Park. United opened up a 2-0 lead, and then the Italians only had one answer to that, and that was pure thuggery. They had no answer to Newcastle playing football and getting the advantage. Apart from repeated fouls and nasty tackles, there was even an assault on the referee with a lovely right hook. You know, the actual goalkeeper, Vieri, was sent off for striking the referee in the Gallagher then goal mouth. Police were on the pitch to calm the Italians down and restore order, and Newcastle eventually won by that 2-0 scoreline. And it was just a remarkable night, which had the crowd in uproar, really.
One of my memories of it was, I couldn't believe, and there's a great picture, again, you go to the Chronicle, go back in time, and you'll see, I think, a policeman marching the goalkeeper off, arm up his back, marching him around the track, and you think, isn't that a fantastic, fantastic thing? Incidentally, Paul, you didn't mention, I think I was the one that scored that night, near post header, and that's what started the riot. That's why he got all upset because I scored.
Right, yes.
I think that's what started. I remember tying the two together. When I scored that goal, he finished up and he got banned for 2 years from playing at national football, didn't he?
I'm not surprised.
I can picture that night vividly in my mind even now. It was just, all right, not for the pure football, but just for the stage of it all. It was just magnificent.
We've focused, obviously, for obvious reasons, mostly on Europe for this episode. But, Paul, can you bring us up to speed with how Newcastle got on domestically during this era?
Yeah, well, apart from the jetting around Europe in league and cup action, or domestic cup action, for those three seasons, United were a bit of an inconsistent side, mid-table, and really Europe took centre stage without doubt. There was an eye-catching FA Cup tie with the champions, Manchester City, in 68-69, when over two games, which were watched in front of 60,000 crowds, both at St James's Park and at the Old Main Road, United eventually lost 2-0. But after the 3 years of, well, before the end of the 3 years of European football, Joe did spend some of the money that he earned through the Fairs Cup. He splashed out £100,000 on Aberdeen's Jimmy Smith, a genius on the ball in midfield, and he became a great favourite of the supporters over the next 3 or 4 years. And more cash was soon to be splashed out as the boss started to change United side with a makeover in 1970-71.
Bob, any insight into why Joe Harvey maybe wanted to change things? We know he lost Brian Pop Robson when he went to West Ham. Then, of course, somewhat confident Cockney centre-forward arrived, Malcolm McDonald. But why do you think he changed things up?
Yeah, well, I think about Joe understood the fans very, very well. And I think they always needed an entertainer or somebody who was the man on the pitch. And you look back, he bought Tony Green. Well, you talk, Jimmy Smith was the first one, real artist. And the crowd, when Jimmy was playing, even if he got beat, it wasn't quite so bad because he entertained and he was just a genius at knocking the ball around, sticking it through people's legs. He was the first guy I ever saw doing the nutmegs regularly. And I used to train against him. And the rest of the lads as well, we used to train with our legs shut because the thing was, don't get nutmegged. And Jinky was just a master at doing that. And then, of course, Tony Green came on the scene. And he, in my mind, one of the best players I've ever seen. And unfortunately, he got injured. And he became a legend in 37 games because the fans actually remember Tony Green as a great player, great entertainer. A little bit like Peter Beasley was, get the ball, attack players. Really got the ball and just said, I'm going to take him on, and he'd go at you. And of course, Super Mac, there's not a lot we can play, but Super Mac, him and I used to be loggerheads on the pitch regularly. Now we're sort of better, and we fell out a few times, but we're the best of pals now. Age gets to you, doesn't it? But Mark and I used to have many, many battles about, I used to say to him, you're not doing this and you're not doing that. And typical Mark, my job is to score goals. You give me the ball. And there's not a lot you could say because he did. And he was dynamic, absolutely dynamic. When he picked, Camille says to me, he was one of the most exciting players. Whenever he got the ball, even us, we say, oh, that's the mortgage paid, because he would just go past people. And he didn't have a lot of, he wasn't like a Peter Beers who could take people on or a Tony Green. Martin just got the ball and on his left foot. And I used to train against him. I know very, very much how good he was. I used to train against him and know that he was going to go to the left because his right foot was useless. And so I used to actually know that he was going to go left, but he would just look at me and just more or less say, I know you know I'm going to go left, but I'm just too quick for you and I'm too strong. And he just, I was quite physical, but if you hit Markham, you knew you'd hit him because he was like a ton of bricks because his pace and his strength as well. And his left back was just famous. It was fantastic. On his left back, bang, terrific. Mm. And I just say him and I had many, many arguments about it. And he, I'm not afraid to say that because we've talked about it, but he was just a one-off super player. And you're right what you say, cocky, arrogant, all these things, but that's what made him a great player. He just wanted to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, well, from a fan's point of view, we've just experienced three magnificent years playing in Europe with the Wyn Davies and Bob Moncur side, the First Cup side, and then we were just going to start another 5 years of the Super Mac era, and it was just magnificent being a Newcastle supporter, even though in domestic football we never actually won anything, but we were entertained and we were excited virtually every game that we went to.
Mm. And we're going to be covering the Super Mac era in next week's episode, and yes, the man himself is going to join us along with his best mate John Gibson, legendary Chronicle writer.
The two of them together, you will not get awarded Edgeways.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. That's the idea. We want the stories, and I'm sure both of them will give us them. Of course, both still columnists for Chronicle Live today. They've got a lot to say, so, and they're going to join us for a special in person recording of Chronicle to discuss that era. So don't miss it, listener. Bob, it's been a real honour to speak to you for this. We're thoroughly enjoying combing through the history of the club era by era, and to get your contribution to the First Cup episode has been really, really special. And I speak for everyone else listening and everyone watching and everyone at Chronicle Live when I say thank you so much for joining us and doing what you did as a player in the 60s and 70s.
Pleasure. Absolutely enjoyable. Yes. Good.
So, yeah, that's it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you have any Newcastle United history stories or observations, facts, stats, memorabilia, you name it, you can email us, the eibwpodcast@reachplc.com, or tweet me at Ketchell on Twitter. Please subscribe to the Everything is Black and White podcast via whichever podcast platform you are using, and follow Chronicle Live's Newcastle United channels on social media. We're at ChronicleNUFC on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. And if you're enjoying what we're doing with this history series, a nice 5-star review on iTunes would be brilliant if you have the time to do that. And last one from me, please stay up to date with everything Black and White by subscribing to Chronicle Live's daily Newcastle United newsletters. These are free. A link to sign up to them is in our show notes. If you hit that and scroll down to Sport Newcastle United Updates, you can tick the box and you'll be signed up. Thanks so much for listening to Chronicle, the history of Newcastle United, with me, Matt Ketchell, Paul Joannou, and our very special guest, Bob Moncur.